Now, TalkZone presents Money at Work, the weekly show that addresses the issues of the day from a financial perspective. Now, here are your hosts, Brian Bourdon and Steve Memory.
Good afternoon. Welcome to this Thursday, April 17th edition of Money at Work with OV Capital Management via TalkZone.com. Coming to you from Alexandria, Virginia, and OV Capital Management is a registered investment advisory headquartered in Virginia. And if we could get Dave to take down the music there. OV Capital is an RIA headquartered in Virginia, subject to all the rules and regulations governing registered investment advisories in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And we do this disclaimer every week by way of being thorough. I'll also add that any broadcast, rebroadcast, or other uses of the descriptions and accounts of this program without the express written consent of Major League Baseball is strongly prohibited. So I guess that covers everybody for today. Joining me on the program, as always, is my partner and chief investment analyst, Steve Memory. And Steve, give us an idea of what you're going to be covering for us today.
Well, it appears spring has sprung. We are in the midst of earnings season. So earnings, wonderful earnings, are driving the news. That's a change. Instead of the news driving stock prices, nice to go ahead and have the dog wagging the tail for a while. So that's going to be the main focus here today. We got a lot of stuff to go ahead and get into. There's also a little bit of news about Janet Yellen. She's has the Fed chairman constantly in the news, and that's okay. So we've had some restatements there. We'll go ahead and take a look a little bit what she's talking about. And then we're going to finish things out here on the day, taking a look at our top three earnings surprises. Not necessarily the biggest earnings movers, but still some things that we think are worth going ahead and taking a look at.
Well, I'm glad that you correlated it to spring, because I think both have been like a real disappointment around here so far. So just wanted to add that also today, our CFP, Lily Poy, is going to be joining us. And good afternoon, Lily. And what's on your mind for today? What are you going to cover for us?
Well, good afternoon, Steve and Brian. It's a beautiful day outside. And I would like to talk about first quarter of 2014, how each sector's performed. And then after that, I would also like to talk about, you know, everybody has filed their tax return, hopefully. They can plan for next year. It's actually not too early, and I'll explain why later.
It's a beautiful day, and you're going to talk about taxes. Terrific. All right.
I'm still planning for last year.
As we get going today, let's take a look, just a brief look at where the markets stand. For today, you know, relatively flat, at least on the Dow. It's up about 15, 16 points at 16,440. The NASDAQ up nicely about 20 points, 4106, and the S&P up about 5.75 at 1868. S&P really kind of treading water, and we kind of started the week in a somewhat of a tailspin in the market, and it's really recovered quite nicely since then, back to about where it was. And a lot of that, as Steve's going to cover later, a lot of that was due to the comments that Janet Yellen made about the Fed holding tight on interest rates and going to kind of take a wait-and-see attitude, correlating things between the unemployment rate and inflation, making sure they're hitting those goals. How are the weak earnings going to merge with those comments she made? Are we going to be in good shape, bad shape, indifferent? And as mentioned earlier, Steve's going to cover a lot of that for us. But right now, Lily's going to come in, and she's going to talk a little bit about some of the first quarter earnings, and again, how you should have had your tax returns done by now, and what you might be doing with the nice refund that I'm sure all of you got. So, Lily, why don't you give us an idea of how the first quarter shaped up for us?
You know, the first quarter actually ended pretty flat if you just look at S&P 500. But if you look at the sectors within the S&P 500, you'd be surprised. Last year's worst one, utilities, was actually up 10%. First quarter of 2014, and followed by healthcare, almost 6%, materials, 3%. And the worst one, I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but I'm just going to go from the best to the worst. The worst is consumer discretionary. It's actually down almost 3% first quarter of 2014. And I might add that consumer discretionary was the best performing sector last year.
Okay, now what drives consumer discretionary, guys? I mean, when people hear, consumer discretionaries, we've got these categories, and what makes up consumer discretionaries, and why would, what would the economic situation be that would either drive them up or drive them down?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with consumer spending. You know, even though consumer discretionary, if you break it down further, you're going to see like auto components and diversified consumer type, hotel, restaurant, leisure. But I always think about shopping mall.
It's been one
what
of those
about
things.
You, Steve?
Yeah, well, that's of course, absolutely. It's been interesting the last couple of years. Here we've had a tight economy, if not, we certainly haven't had a growing economy, let's say. I mean, it's been moderately growing, kind of sluggishly coming along, not a booming kind of recovery like we've seen, particularly during the 80s or the early 2000s or the 90s. So there's been a substantial amount of unemployment. And yet what we've seen is a lot of earnings being driven from the consumer discretionary area. So when you take a look at a lot of the things that are out there, as Lily mentioned, the things that people go ahead and spend their superfluous cash on, whether it's Nike, whether it's Coach, whether it's any other company that operates in the discretionary area, these guys have actually done extraordinarily well. And that's been one of those things that's been a little not disturbing, but confusing, I think, a little bit. If we take a look at what incomes have done, and they've remained largely flat, people have been borrowing to spend. And a lot of the consumer discretionary spending that occurred back before the financial collapse in 2007-2008 was done oftentimes out of excess cash or equity from the home bubble, housing bubble. So it's not that unusual to see that we have a pullback here finally at some point in time in the consumer discretionary area.
Well, I was by the Poi household last week and was strongly, and I forgot to tell you this, but we need to find out, who's manufacturing all the Fisher-Price toys now. Because Lily lives in like a 12,000 square foot house and like 8,000 square feet of it is Fisher-Price stuff for her, for her grandson.
The grandson is playing with it. It's not like, kept in its original packaging and kept up for future investment here, right?
He's got whole cities going up in the living room there. So it's pretty cool, actually. But, Lil, so what else, can you tell us about the first quarter? We know, what did well? What do you expect to happen now? I mean, does always what goes up comes down? Are people taking profits? So what are they doing with the news?
Well, it really surprises me that utilities actually had a 10% gain the first quarter. So going forward, we're already in the second quarter, beginning of second quarter. Now, if you look at the market today, it just give me an indication that people are taking more risk again. Because the utilities actually is down.
So they were going to safety in the first quarter, basically, because we saw that the market started off the new year kind of getting pummeled. And so, is it safe to say or fair to say anyway that people kind of ran to utilities, they kind of wanted that safety net, and now possibly they're feeling a little bit more comfortable, feeling their oats a little bit, and want to get more aggressive?
Well, when there's a high economic uncertainty, and of course, you have the bad weather, and some of the data actually, frankly, is pretty disappointing. So people, investors in general, would try to be more defensive, even though defensive sectors is a lower growth sector going forward.
We talked about defensive sector recently, some of those defensive stocks, actually. It was a couple of weeks ago, I think.
Yeah, putting the toe in the water kind of thing. Before you get real brave, start out taking baby steps, and sometimes those are the defensive positions.
As we talked about, I think, when we look at defensive stocks, it's mostly those positions which are designed not to go ahead and retrench as much when the economy starts moving negatively. They may very well have a dividend, but not necessarily the highest dividends that are out there. So they're good, stable, long-term, consistent companies that you can kind of count on. And usually this kind of corresponds to things that oftentimes tend to be what we call the sin items, things like tobacco, like alcohol, like gaming. I guess if you're addicted to these things, then the people who go ahead and provide them get a steady source of revenue.
I'm not above a few sinful purchases, you know, taking the odd bottle of Maker's Mark off the shelf and, you know, good times and bad.
Well, moderation, of course, being the key. You know, I mean, it's the idea of moderation in cigarette smoking is probably out the window, quite frankly. But, you know, if we're not talking about going ahead and being teetotalers, neither are we talking about drinking Ripple on the street corner. But, you know, the thing is more than just, I guess, an addiction. It's if somebody is going to go ahead and give up, let's say, that trip to France this year, or the trip out west to go ahead and ski or something like that. They may do that, but counteract that with maybe something a little less expensive, but a little more indulgent. So people don't necessarily cut back on their wine or their alcohol or beer purchase, and they may go ahead and buy that cigar and just enjoy themselves for a smaller moment at a less expensive rate. And so that's part of why we see those things particularly being some of the defensive stocks. But also you take a look at some of the utilities. Utility tends to be fairly defensive in nature. It's a regulated industry, and people go ahead and need to turn on the lights. You know, they need to go ahead and stay warm in the winter. So as a result, we see them as being decent defensive stocks.
Lily, we've got about 3 minutes before our first break. What do you see? You see anything, you know, pertaining to earnings that might be trending in a good direction or a poor direction right now because of the reports?
Well, actually, I was going to comment on Procter & Gamble that Steve had talked about. And actually, yeah. I thought it was a really good pick. And
okay,
I think
that symbol is PG.
PG. Okay. And he had advised, you know, some of the people to play defensive. You know, when the market kept going down, and he said, you know, you don't have to just completely get out of the market. If your portfolio is well diversified, you sleep pretty well. And, you know, by having like Procter & Gamble and maybe some utilities in your portfolio.
And we own Procter & Gamble here at OV Capital.
So we do own Procter & Gamble, currently trading just below $82 a share with a dividend yield of about 3.15%.
Real quick, what are you doing there? Buy, hold, what are you doing there?
We still like Procter & Gamble. It's,
okay,
you know, it's a position that we still own. We are not adding because pretty much we have what we wanted to. But when we talked about it, let's say a couple of weeks ago, we were trading at roughly $80 a share. And I guess, what did I say? We were currently trading at about 81, almost 82, just shy of 82. So we're up a little bit over top of where we were 2 weeks ago. But again, you know, Procter & Gamble, one of those stocks that we like for the long term.
Okay, Lil, going into your next segment, we're going to come up on a break here in about a minute. So tell us what you're going to come in with after the break.
I would like to talk about maybe planning for 2014, you know, just based on, you know, what people have seen on their tax return. And there's some strategy that they can use to, I guess, maximize their wealth building.
Well, excellent. We're going to come back with that on the other side of the break. Right now, we're going to leave you for some commercial announcements. This is Money at Work through OV Capital, TalkZone.com.
Welcome back to Money at Work on TalkZone. Here's Brian Bourdon and Steve Memory.
Thank you. Welcome back. And, of course, we're also joined by Lily Poy, as we usually are. And before we get started with our second segment today, just wanted to remind you that if you want to you have a question you want to get into the program or an idea you want to share with us, you can do so by emailing us. And you can send that to mail@ovcapital.net. And you can also check us out on the World Wide Web, www.ovcapital.net. And you can check us out there, see what we're up to, and I think you'll like it. Lula, you were talking about before the break, preparing for 2014, what people should be looking at and what they might do to get themselves ready to have a good year, maybe even a better year than the one before. And of course, they're going to know that by looking at their taxes. So why don't you take it and run with it and let us know what's on your mind on that?
Sure. You know, when I was doing income tax this year, I noticed that a lot of people were surprised that they are actually paying more, even if their income did not increase. So that tells me that a lot of people just didn't really think ahead. So now that we know, you know, the income tax rate has changed, and if you're in a higher, you know, tax bracket, then you might want to think about going into, portfolio that would give you dividend that is not taxed as ordinary income. You know, like some of the real estate investment trusts or master limited partnership, they really give you good income. But as far as tax is concerned, they might not be as tax efficient as you think.
That's a good idea. And you should really, I mean, if you don't have a financial advisor, obviously we're prejudicial, we'd say get yourself one, and probably more specifically get yourself this one that you're listening to. But failing that, you really, Lily, they need to be talking to their CPAs on these things and really trying to understand how taxes work, and how, if they've got a CPA who understands these kind of things, maybe one who can work with the advisor to put something together for them that's going to be more tax friendly, or at least, because some people, like you said, in certain tax bracket, it's never going to be overly friendly, but it can be efficient, can it?
Exactly. You know, just like the simple things such as a Roth IRA account versus a traditional IRA account. Yeah, Roth is really good. You know, down the road when you take distribution, you don't ever have to pay tax. But if you're faced with a higher tax situation, then it might make sense for you to do a deductible traditional IRA account. It will reduce your tax for this year and still have tax deferred growth.
Now, you do a lot of tax preparation for folks during tax season, which course just ended for those that didn't get extensions anyway. What were you seeing? Were you in the tax returns you were doing? Obviously, you know, they're all private, but the overriding number of them, were you seeing folks that had tax smart portfolios, or were you finding problems? What kind of returns were they getting? Were they prepared?
I would say 80% of the people are not prepared. And I think it's a lack of education out there, and people are fearful about investing in the market because they think, oh, the market is going to crash like what happened to 2008. But if you look at history, you know, going back, if you have a long time horizon, stocks always outperform bonds.
Well, and it's something that, in Steve, you can speak to this. Investing is something that really, you know, the business we're in notwithstanding and all those disclaimers, but investing is something that people have to do if they're going to get over the hump and get retired. They just can't stick their money into a passbook savings account and expect, you know, that safety is going to rule the day unless you already have so much money that you don't need to worry about it. Investing is really the only way to grow yourself towards retirement, isn't it? I mean, practically speaking.
Well, keep in mind, people make investments every day, and whether they think they're doing it or not, they're making choices. And those choices are investments. People either invest in their savings account, they invest in their CDs, they invest in that piece of artwork or those new shoes or that new car, or they invest in stocks and bonds. But we all make choices. We all make investments with our money. We invest our time, we invest our efforts, and we invest our dollars and cents. And the thing that most people don't realize is a lot of them are making bad decisions with those investment dollars just simply because they think they're not quote-unquote investing, or they think they are afraid of investing. When people go ahead and put their money in a savings account, particularly these days, you're not getting any interest rates. I mean, we're getting 0.25% at some of the best rates I've seen in demand deposits. And inflation is out there. It's not the 3% that we were looking at, but you're not reaching that, that inflation rate. Consumer prices are increasing. We expect that they will continue to increase unless we find ourselves in a deflationary environment. So how do we go ahead and prepare for the day when we actually are not earning an income anymore? It's one thing to be risk averse. And I understand people say, hey, look, I take a look at my statement and I know next month it's not going to be any worse. I'm not going to lose any money except for what I'm spending. But the problem is that unless we have an unlimited amount of resources, at some point in time, our spending will significantly cut into dollar amount that we have on the table. And yes, there is some risk of loss, as there is with just about any investment that's out there. But over the long term, and this is where it comes and down to actual planning. This is where a planner is handy in being able to go ahead and help people get through that resistance level. Show you that if you don't need this money immediately in 2, 3, 5, 10 years, you're likely to be better off. I mean, even given this past financial meltdown we had, which was, by any way you look at it, a significant event, the folks who had their money in an equity investment, at least here at OV, are doing substantially better than if they had gone ahead and kept their money in a savings account. Now, that doesn't mean you're not going to have some times that are difficult, but you can minimize that difficulty. Nobody says you need to go out and put all of your money into Google, or nobody says you've got to go ahead and put all of your money into Apple. Okay. With a diversified portfolio, you can manage the overall risk and you can really significantly reduce the potential for downside loss.
Here's something else though. And you know, you were talking about Google, you were talking about Apple, individual stocks, individual equities. And Lily was talking about how folks have been undereducated. They haven't gone out and really probably researched this, but folks who just kind of take their money and just, they kind of throw it into mutual funds and just figure, okay, I'm invested. I'm invested in the market. I've got these mutual funds, but that can create a huge tax liability. Even if you lose money, Lily was talking about, you know, folks who earned less and paid more in taxes. Well, you can invest in mutual funds, lose on them, and because of the amount of trading that takes place in them, you can pay taxes and
sure,
be operating at a loss. And if that's you, if that sounds like you, if you're unclear, listen, you know, you come in here, Steve will be happy to take a look at your portfolio and review it for you. No obligation. We just want to help set you on the right path. If you don't have an advisor, you know, remember, mail at ovcapital.net. You can reach us that way and just say, hey, I'd like you guys to take a look. If you're not in the immediate area, do it over the phone, do it over email for you. So, make sure that you have the information at hand that you need, because there are no foolproof methods here to investing or to managing your tax liabilities. Lily, what were you seeing as far as, on the tax returns you did? Were they keeping pace with, the market did great last year. If you look at the S&P, it did 30%. Of course, that's all equity, but were folks keeping pace with that, or?
No, I would say a lot of people underinvested, and a lot of people mentally try to time the market. And I think a lot of people even go the wrong way. You know, most of the people would buy a stock here, buy a stock there, you know, whatever is popular. And it ends up they're just chasing performance. And they would sell at precisely the wrong time.
And, you know, it's kind of funny. You've got on the user end people chasing performance, and you've got on the other end people chasing returns. With mutual funds, it's like, what can I get in that's going to give me the best return? And people looking at mutual funds and saying basically the same thing on the other end of the spectrum. So it's kind of one of those things that you're talking about, and those are reactive kind of situations rather than putting together a portfolio with a professional that's designed to meet your specific needs.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I see a lot of very smart people. You know, these are really, really intelligent people, but still, you know, a lot of them just think that they just randomly pick a stock here, pick a stock there, then they're going to be, you know, good at retirement. But, you know, you, if you look at all the studies, it has shown that you need to have a financial plan and you need to really be comprehensive about it. And asset allocation, actually.
Actually, there was a study that was done. I think Fidelity did a study just taking a look at what the individual investor returns were compared with their fund returns. And I really wish I had kept this study because it was really rather interesting. And part of it is it takes into account what happens when these people are trying to go ahead and time their mutual fund purchases. And you'd see a regular rate of return over the long term of in the neighborhood of 6-8% or so for particular funds. The inflation rate being about 3%, and individual investors tended to get about 2-2.5%. Now I'm pulling these numbers out of the backside of my brain right now. So
I've seen that study, Steve. That is very,
you said
very
brain.
True.
What a relief.
But it's so, you know, it goes without saying that I may not have the numbers down exactly, but yeah, Lily, as you said, I think you've seen it, and then a lot of us have seen it. It's really rather interesting that that there could be such a dramatic discrepancy between people who are ostensibly trying to do the right thing and not having an advisor or somebody there to go ahead and put a plan together for them to get them going in the right direction, end up creating a scenario that's lagging in its what we call its return on investment, its ROI.
Well, it's hope, fear, hope, and greed, I always say. You know, people react, and as a planner and as a financial advisor like you and Brian, we anticipate. And so you kind of like look at things differently, and you have a multidisciplined approach to managing money.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because the panacea that folks that sell mutual funds will give you is something called dollar cost averaging.
Right.
You know, just throw the money in, and when the price is down, you'll get more. And when the price is up, of course, you'll get less, but it's a steady way to buy in. But if you haven't done the research and it's not a very good mutual fund, who cares that you're getting a whole lot of junk? You know, boy, it's crummy, but boy, I didn't pay much for it. I mean, that's not really what you're looking for. It's more,
true.
You know, you want to research these things, do you not?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things, like I like to say, going ahead and just tossing money into the market and going away is a little like getting in your car, getting on the highway, putting on cruise control, and turning around and talking to people in the back. You may be fine for a little while, but the fact remains that something is going to happen. Either a car is going to stop in front of you, the road's going to turn. It's a recipe for disaster. Things don't go well if you're not managing or staying on top of them.
Lily, I want you to stick around with us because we're going to come out back on the other side of the break and going to welcome your input. But that is going to be the segment where Steve's going to get off and running for us on some of the things that are on his mind today. You are listening to Money at Work with OV Capital through TalkZone.com, and we'll be back on the other side of the break.
And now, more of Money at Work on TalkZone.com. Here's Brian Bourdon and Steve Memory.
Thank you. Welcome back, everyone. Again, this is Money at Work, OV Capital Management through TalkZone.com. If you'd like to get a message to us, you may do so by emailing us at mail@ovcapital.net. And you can check us out on the internet at www.ovcapital.net. And we'd love to hear from you. Before we went to break, we were kind of having a three-way discussion on, I guess, you know, to kind of encapsulate it, we really got into talking about the more of the uninformed investor. As Lily was saying, doesn't mean they're not smart, very smart people, just not, you know, kind of putting the time in. And a lot of it is you look at all the information, you throw up your hands and say, let's buy mutual funds, or I'll just, you know, whatever, you know, just get the money in the market. And that can kind of come back to bite you on your tax returns. So that's what we were talking about. And just thought you guys might want to put your finishing thoughts on that before we get rolling with the second half of the program. So, Lily, anything you want to add to what we were talking about?
Sure. I'll give you an example of a PIMCO, Total Return. Remember, it was like the greatest fund there is on earth. And I remember reviewing a portfolio that has PIMCO, Total Return. And the year, that particular year, PIMCO Total Return actually had great performance, but then this person's account was in the red. So upon further investigation, I look at the numbers, it was actually dividend reinvestment. The fund was great, you know, from inception to the end of the year. But, you know, during the year, you have spike up, spike down. And some of the purchases were bought when the price was really high. So it actually affected the ending return of this great PIMCO total return. So what I'm saying is that you really do need to have a very experienced, competent advisor to give you investment advice rather than thinking that you just put some money in a fund and then you're going to be great forever.
Sure, absolutely. That's one of those things that that you really you can't go ahead and just put things on cruise control, like we were saying. And interestingly enough, when you go ahead and people have their 401ks, there's a lot of money people have in investment vehicles like mutual funds. And a 401k is a perfect example of one of those areas where mutual funds really work well. I mean, you can't necessarily go ahead and invest in individual equities. But oftentimes people really lack a lot of information and they tend to do the set it and forget it thing in their 401k as well. And that could be a recipe for some disappointment. At OB Capital, we do have the ability to go ahead and work with certain companies and certain plans. And if you're interested in your 401k, because quite frankly, think of it this way. If you had this money outside of 401k, you'd be looking for advice. Most people have their substantial investments in 401k plans. And here at OB, we do have the ability to go ahead and provide advice on 401ks and take a look at things and provide the kind of guidance that really most people are looking for.
And in some instances, your 401k plan, if you check with your human resources department, there are at least parts of it that can be managed by advisors.
Certainly.
And that opens part of your 401k up to the entire universe of investments, not just that narrow menu of the family of funds that you're looking at all the time when you're looking at them and you think, well, I don't know the difference between these things. So even if someone like OV Capital or someone else cannot directly manage them, they can at least give you advice and make sure that your 401k plan fits the rest of the portfolio that they may have put together or that you may be trying to put together on your own, just to make sure there's not a lot of duplication of effort there and you truly are as diverse as you need to be.
Yeah. Lily was talking about PIMCO funds, and it reminded me of something that occurred back in early 2000s, 2003, with Putnam. If you remember Putnam, Putnam Investments was a great mutual fund family, and they had some great advisors and did a good job. And then in 2003, they were hit with some investigations through the SEC through what they called rapid trading of mutual funds. They ended up being a new regulation about how often you can go ahead and move between mutual funds because of this, but it really impacted Putnam, and it impacted what the manager could do. Even if you left it in there and you thought, hey, these guys are okay, they're good managers, the amount of withdrawals that were being taken from Putnam funds required them to keep an exorbitant amount of cash on hand, and that impacted overall returns. So you can have your returns impacted by everybody else and not just you. Now, PIMCO, I guess back in 2011, they received a service award for industry-leading service. They're still around there. But this kind of fluctuation of things, if you went ahead and you just kind of put blinders on and you didn't stay on top of things, you could look at your portfolio of your PIMCO funds and go from 2002 down to 2003 and say, what the heck happened? I've just lost a whole bunch of money. The market isn't necessarily doing that bad. Matter of fact, in 2003, the market was starting to go ahead and have a real big rally. And so here you had a circumstance where funds were underperforming in the face of good performance by the overall market. But so anyway, that's just enough to wrap up the idea that it's important regardless of where you have money invested. And we all have money and we all have time and effort invested everywhere. But you need to have somebody take a look at it and keep on top of it. even if it's just, you know, to go ahead and check in and take a look at your allocation.
So what's going on with...
Steve was mentioning that the average investor had a 2.3% return. I'm actually looking at the chart here. The title is Maximizing the Power of Diversification from 1994 to 2012. So you have all these different asset classes.
Was I right on that number?
Yeah, you're right on that number. 2%, 2.3%. Now, if you use, you know, you diversify sufficiently, you actually should have almost a 7.75% return. So okay. The average investor is lacking by what, 5%? More than 5%.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
that's the difference.
Yeah, the idea of picking a mutual fund, just like picking a stock, is not something that you really want to do, unless some people like to go ahead and gamble with it. And if you want to go ahead and have something to talk about at the, you know, the cocktail party, well, you know, that's, you're investing in a story. You're not investing in your future or your long-term retirement or your investment. The investment you get is the ability to go ahead and say, hey, look what I did.
Besides, I've never been at one of those cocktail parties where someone says, yeah, here's the symbol. I lost 58% on this. My portfolio totally tanked. Now, it's the one thing that did well that everybody wants to sound like a genius. So you really
need to. That's the way it always is.
Here's another chart.
Annual returns and intra-year decline. So, you know, we had a lot of ups and downs, right? So if I look at this chart, S&P intra-year declines versus calendar year returns. So despite the average intra-year drop of 14.7%, the annual return is positive 26 out of 34 years.
Okay. So. Well, I tell you what, let's move on a little bit here because we're kind of running out of time in this segment. Just wanted to get a brief amount of information in on what's going on in the economy. Unemployment numbers for the week came out. We sat, looks like we're still sitting at about that 6.7%. It's the second month in a row, just off the lows of 6.6. So there hasn't been a significant amount of new unemployment numbers that are coming in. People are taking this as a sign that maybe this economy is starting to gain a little traction and we're in a bit of recovery. On top of that, Janet Yellen was out again this week. She was at the New York Economic Club. And for those of you wondering, the New York Economic Club's members are constantly being bullied by the members of the New York Athletic Club that kick sand in their face all the time. But at the New York Athletic Club, she was there going ahead and yeah, a little question and answer session. They have these up there. And one of the things that she was talking about is trying to refocus on what her comments earlier had been about interest rates. And the encouraging thing that she mentioned was her quote, as she says, "I hope it's completely clear that while monetary policy is very accommodating at this point, and I focused on the need to keep it so," that then she goes on to say that they will respond to whatever needs to be done. But the idea is in that little segment is that she's focused on the need to keep it very accommodating at this point in time. So what the market is taking from that is the idea that that interest rates are low and we're planning on staying low for some time, that there isn't the threat of a raise or an increase in interest rates yet. Now, what remains is we'll see whether we're going to continue the pace of tapering or whether we will go ahead and see maybe some accommodation for that tapering. The unemployment numbers, like we said, were fairly decent. We're actually seeing some good earnings here coming out. If we take a look at earnings, and this is kind of a little bit as a way to go ahead and lead in to earnings, some of the earnings we're going to talk about in the next segment. But what we've got a fair number of companies coming out with positive earnings surprises, or at least making earnings numbers. There's, you know, there are a few that that haven't made earnings, big numbers, specifically something, well, Google came out and significantly disappointed. That was one of those things that really kind of caught investors on the chin, if you will. They came in, they were short by about 13 cents, coming in at $6.27 against estimates of about $6.40. A few of the banks came in as well so far. JP Morgan and Fifth Third, both under reporting right now. Overall, the earnings season hasn't been all that disappointing, you know. So we're getting some good numbers coming out there. We're getting some solid results. Coke came out in line. Who else came out in line? We had Bed Bath & Beyond came out with inline earnings at $1.60. So I mean, this is at least the sign that the economy is fairly stable and going to go ahead and move forward. When we come back, actually, what I want to talk about, Brian, is our top three earnings surprises. Okay, so if we get our top three earnings surprises that are out there, there are a few things that we'll go ahead and we'll talk about, and I'll give you a peek at it, right? Of course, one of the big ones out there is SanDisk. So that's going to be the first on our earnings surprise top three. But after the break, we'll go ahead and we'll hit up with that.
All right, we'll come back with that then. You're listening to Money at Work with OV Capital Management through TalkZone.com. We'll be back right after these words.
You're listening to Money at Work on TalkZone.com. Back to Brian Bourdon and Steve Memory.
All right, welcome back. This will be the last segment of Money at Work here for April 17th. And we were talking about surprise earnings. And throw me in that category because Steve was snapping his fingers and gesticulating at me. I guess I was typing a little too hard on the keyboard that last segment, looking some things up. And it was distracting him. So if you're hearing that out there, just know that it's because the nerve center is vastly and fast at work for you here, trying to find new and up-to-date information. But Steve, you were talking about earnings that surprise, companies with surprise earnings. And hit us with that first one you teased us with before the break.
Absolutely. Well, we were talking about SanDisk, but one of the things I want to go ahead and mention is Lily kind of made an allusion to this point as we were talking during the break, and that is even though a company may come out with earnings that aren't so great, okay, I think you mentioned IBM, Lily. Mm-hmm. Their earnings were not all that great, but the analysts that are out there kind of had that estimate already in line. So they were looking for about $2.54 a share, and earnings were in line with estimates at $2.54. Now that's below a year ago where they did $3 a share. So you can see that the earnings trend is not necessarily positive, but the surprise wasn't there. It didn't come out and it didn't startle anybody. Most companies, if they're going to surprise, tend to like to surprise on the upside. So that's not unusual to see a number of earnings surprises that come out there. And the one we were talking about before the break, SanDisk, currently trading about $83.60 or so, has a yield of about 1.18%. This company designs, makes, and markets flash memory storage products. Things like mobile phones, digital cameras, laptops, universal series bus, that's called the USB drives, the electronics whereby information is stored, is what is produced by SanDisk. One of the things they are heavily into now is something called an SSD or a solid state drive, which if you don't have one in your laptop or your desktop computer, let me tell you, it makes a world of difference, particularly when you're going ahead and starting or booting up a computer. It starts up in seconds. It's a really kind of wonderful thing. But the information actually stays on that drive even when powered down. So it's really kind of driving a lot of things. Their profit surged about 62% first quarter. Revenue rose by 13%. Earnings estimates were $1.17. Actual earnings came out at $1.32. That's a 12.8% surprise. Now, the stock's up about 10% or so today. Most of what we're looking at is driving this, is a 61% growth in SSD, solid-state drive revenue. So there's strong retail performance there. The question is whether it can be sustained given the lackluster PC sales that we're really seeing out there. Currently, SanDisk, SNDK, trading above its bullish support. It's got relative strength against the market being positive. Support levels at about $74 a share. The PE first is not $15.05, but 15. We aren't buying it. We don't own it in any portfolios here at OV Capital.
Where do you get information?
A lot of that comes into, you can look at a number of different things. And they all file reports, and a lot of these things are out there. You take a look at the news. CNBC has some things that come in about earnings and all that. It's a good place to go ahead and take a look. When it comes to going ahead and looking at the technicals, there are different providers, or you can do them yourself. But it takes a little while to go ahead and get used to it. Given that we got a couple more here, I'm going to rattle through these next two. Morgan Stanley, symbol is MS, trading at $31 a share. This has made a lot of news recently. The yield is, I think it's 1.67%, if I'm reading that correctly. I believe, where are we currently on Morgan Stanley? Symbol MS, plugging it in. I just want to check and make sure my yield is, sorry, I was wrong.
$30.75.
Yeah, 0.67% is the yield on it. Morgan Stanley is one of the largest financial firms in the U.S., operating investment banking, securities, investment, and wealth management. Currently trading above its bullish support. Relative strength against the market is a buy. Support at $29 a share. So trading in that $30 range, $30 to $31, is a pretty decent place for it. In particular, we're looking at the full integration of the Morgan Stanley and Smith Barney platforms. We see wider operating margins than for them in 2014. The trading levels have improved. We're seeing increases in the number of investment banking issues that are out there. And the two things that are out there really run a lot of that syndicate are Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley. So they're one of the ones to really kind of benefit from this. Their earnings estimate was $60 a share, excuse me. They came in at 68 cents, and that's a 13%+ surprise range. So that's a real nice upside for them. We're looking for about $38 a share out of it. We don't believe we own Morgan Stanley in any portfolios currently here at OV Capital. We are not buying them, mostly because we are pretty well set in our financial sectors across the board. But as I mentioned, a $30 a share to $32 a share looks pretty good, because you're getting a substantial amount of upside there for the amount of downside. Finally, the number one, whichever way you want to look at it, out of our top three earnings surprises, Constellation Brands. The symbol on Constellation is STZ. Currently trading in the $80 to $81 range, does not have a yield. This is a growth stock of the purest kind. There's something that's not tech. How about that? That's a growth stock. These Constellation Brands is a leading international producer and marketer of alcoholic beverages. They are they have a broad portfolio of wine, imported beer, and distilled spirits. They recently went ahead and acquired the remainder of Crown from Anheuser-Busch. So they have that whole thing. Their products like Crown Whiskey, Canadian Whiskey, Robert Mondavi Wines, Franciscan Estates, Wild Horse, Estancia, Clos du Bois, Blackstone, Ravenswood. A lot of these make some really decent red wines. I'm a fan of a few of them. But they also do Corona Light, Negra Modelo, St. Pauli Girl, Qingdao. So they have a broad beer portfolio as well.
So something for everyone, basically, is what I'm hearing, because I've seen all of these brands all over the place.
Absolutely. We're looking at they got a new state-of-the-art brewery that they picked up in the remainder of that Crown transaction. They're porting all of their beer production over to the new state-of-the-art facility. We expect the Crown brands to outperform the overall beer industry as well. They came out with earnings estimates of about 76 cents. Actual was 81 cents, and that's a 6.5% improvement. The PE ratio is 8.12 versus their peers of 20.42. That's a substantial discount. Yeah.
That's good stuff.
How about the PEG ratio of 0.08 to the peers of 2.35? They have higher earnings growth and higher sales growth. This guy is something to go ahead and take a close look at. We're looking for about $100 a share out of here. We got support at about $75. As I mentioned, we're trading about the $80 range. That's if we manage to go ahead and get fully valued at that $100, we're looking at a 25% gain on there. Constellation Brands, symbol is STZ, buy it for growth in portfolios. We are owners and buyers of STZ at this time. OB Capital Portfolios, many of which own STZ.
Okay, now when you talk about support levels, you're talking about the price where it drops to and then just doesn't go below.
Right. That's not a fundamental measure. It's a technical measure. And this is when the prices kind of go all over. There's what we call, major support and minor support. And what we're looking at really is more of a minor support level, but a triple bottom at 75. So pretty decent.
Okay. We're closing in on our last minute here. Lily, you got anything you want to add?
Well, I kind of like to talk about China next week.
Okay. I won't ask why. I think I know.
Okay.
So we'll do that. We'll cover the Chinese market, maybe a few of your relatives if you want to, and we'll just make it, we'll make that part of your segment. And Steve, I never ask you what you want to talk about until the day before because I know you're always thinking. So we'll be back with you next week. Same time, same place, 2:00 Thursday afternoon on the 24th. You've been listening to Money at Work with OV Capital Management through TalkZone.com. Have a great weekend, everybody.